this happiness, the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with more than my share of happiness.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ken Dodd!
Thank you.
First question is, Ken, you turned pro over 50 years ago.
Is it really that long?
It is that long.
That's a hell of a long time to wait for a laugh.
And that was only three shows. So, do you still get nervous before you go on?
Nervous? You never really get over stage nerves, you know. And believe it or not, all sorts of entertainers and comedians, which is what also I've got on my passport, they all have their own little rituals. Some people have a little rhyme, they say. Some people turn around three times. I have a little word with head office. Yeah, before every show, I have a little word with the boss. And just ask, you know, can I do a good show? And then I'll probably undo it all by touching wood.
Jubilee, jubilance from the one and only Ken Dodd!
We're the greatest in the North, aren't we?
Yes!
And the most modest. People in the North, they always want to help you. I mean, in Leeds. Stop anybody in the street in Leeds and say, excuse me, do you know the right time? They say, yes, thank you. Listen. I was in a shop in Leeds the other morning. I said to the fellow, I said, excuse me, can you help me out? He said, certainly, which way to come in? Northerners always make you welcome. They'll always invite you back to their homes for a fight. Set the whippet on you or stick a ferret up the left leg of your trousers. It's a feature, like mushy peas. They say, come in, lad, and warm yourself. Ah, sit there down. Not there, that is. I've got your tea. Oh, pity for that, I was. Put the kettle on, mother. Aye, it suits you. In the North, we're greatly, aren't we? We're honest. We call a spade, to be trip over one.
Is there any one or two particular theatres that are really dear to you, Ken? Any favourites?
Your favourite theatre is the one you're playing tomorrow night. It's my ambition to play every live theatre in Britain. And I've had a good go. I've been up to the Shetlands twice. They had a place called the Garrison Theatre. I thought it'd be a hot seat, isn't it? It's beautiful. It's a small theatre like this, but it's all wood, which is amazing because there's no trees in the Shetlands. A lot of very unhappy dogs, but no trees. Because it's the wind. It, nothing can grow. So we played up there. We played right down the other way to the Channel Islands, to Alderney, around there. Tiny little theatre there, leaning against the pub. Or maybe the other way around. And Guernsey and Jersey. Then right across the other way to places like Hunstanton, where we go every year. That beautiful place. On the East Coast, it's very, very bracing. I go there all the time to have my teeth fixed. But they... Hunstanton and Cromer, and then the other side, way, way west to Haverford West, and a place called Brycheiniog. All these Welsh names, you know, but they're lovely people. Yeah, all the Welsh, Brycheiniog, and a place called Ystradinlais. They all have funny names, you know. This fellow was driving his car in North Wales, right? Yeah. And the car develops some trouble, engine trouble, kind of conked out anyway. So he goes to a phone box and he dials the AA. He said, can you send me some assistance? Oh, yes, he said, we've got a man who knows what he's doing. We'll send you an assistant. Good. She said, where are you? He said, where am I? He said, I'm in Wales. Yes, I know, she said, but it's a big place. Said, where are you in Wales? He said, let me see, where are you? He said, I'm in a place called Danger Goslow. She said, where? He said, I'm in a place called Danger Goslow. She said, that's danger, go slow. So we play Llandudno, and then we go right down to Cornwall, you know, Truro. Yeah, here we go, we're all. So you can't really get a favour. They all have something to make you remember, and the best theatres, of course, are the ones that are run by people who love them.
I've lived a very adventurous life. Have you really? Yes, I have, by Jove, I have. Would you like to tell us about it? I certainly would. Is it filthy? No, don't bother then. How is it? I was born at a very early age, so as to be near to my mother, and for the first... for the first 3 months, I had to rough it. No talcum powder in those days. I was clever. By Jove, I was a clever baby. When I was 6 months old, I could walk. I had to. The bottom fell out of the pram.
Tell us about your childhood, Ken, if you will, and about your family background.
My childhood? You're not going to believe this now. Ladies and gentlemen, you're very lovely people, and you're very kind to be here tonight. But this time, please don't laugh. No, promise me, please. Now, don't. What I'm going to say now is very sad. Please don't laugh. You've done very well up to now. So. I wasn't a pretty baby. I was an ugly child. Yeah. I was the only baby in the street whose dummy had a 12-inch flange. The day I was born, the midwife held me upside down and punched my dad. So, my childhood, yeah, my childhood. I'm the middle one of three. There's Billy, the brother, older brother, 2 years older than me, and June, 2 years younger than me. My mother and father, Arthur and Sarah Dodd. My dad was a coal merchant, a coal man, Nutty Ash. And I had a wonderful childhood. Fantastic. Round Nutty Ash, where I live, it used to be all fields and cows. Now it's just fields. But there's round Nutty Ash, fields, hundreds and hundreds of... it was, at one time, allotments. And so when I was a little boy, we just went mad. It was wonderful. So, yeah, I had a delightfully happy childhood. Very happy childhood. A wonderful, wonderful mother and father who gave us all kinds of advice. My mother used to say, you can be anything you want to be, Kenny, as long as you want to be. And one more thing she said, wherever you go, always wear a clean shirt. And my father, he didn't mind what I did as long as I went out to work. Wonderful father who could he was a marvellous man. You see, he was a playful chap as well. What other father would help his son, this is true, on a Sunday afternoon to fit wooden wings to his bike and drive off the top of a haystack? My hero was Just William, you know, Just William of the William books. And I thought I was William. My main hobbies was falling out of trees and setting fire to my coat.
I used to walk backwards to school, just to see if it could be done. I've still got the lump on the back of my head to prove it. Backwards.
What were you like at school, Ken? Were you an ordinary sort of pupil, or did you stand out, or were you athletic and... What, catching the girl's eyes?
Happy school, actually. Even in Nutty Ash school now, they've still got my initials where I carved them with my teeth on the... No, I went to Nutty Ash Infant School, and then from there to the big school down the road. A bit like Will Hayes School, you know.
By this time, Ken, had you started listening to the radio then? Has already started forming favourite comics and stuff?
Oh, yes. The radio was everybody's entertainment. Not just entertainment, but enlightenment, for news. I can see my brother, Billy, and June and myself, we used to love Children's Hour, and we used to have our heads halfway down the loudspeaker.
As Ernie stood there, a little bleating voice spoke at his elbow.
Mr. Ernest, sir, you do look funny this morning. Your eyes are all goggly.
So do you look goggly, Larry, my lad, if you could see what I see. Can you? Or do my eyes deceive me?
I don't know, Mr. Ernest, sir. What can you see?
I can see a most dreadful sight. Something I never expected to see. I wonder my eyes don't pop right out.
That reminds me. Did you know that if you hold a guinea pig up by its tail, its eyes will drop out? My friend Dennis told me last night. Isn't it curious?
Come on and make a trip upon the bandwagon. It's a wild, boys, it's a grand wagon. Come on and make a trip and join the bandwagon. Starting now, boys.
And then we discovered a thing called bandwagon, which was that wonderful little man, Arthur Askey, and he became our favourite. See, Arthur was a very, very good entertainer for kids, because all of his stuff was all just, by Jove, all giddy, giddy, giddy stuff. And his young, hang on, hello, Plymouth. It's just energy, and the energy came through that loudspeaker, through his voice.
Oh, I'm talking about the Queen. I don't know whether you heard. She visited the hospital the other week. She walked down the wards. There was an old fella lying in bed. She said, what's the matter with you, my good man? He said, I've got a blooming big boil on me bum. Oh, she said, I am sorry. I hope it soon gets better, and faded away. So the matron came dashing over and said, how dare you talk to the Queen like that? He said, well, I am. I've got a blooming big boil on me bum. She said, you could have told you had a boil. Why didn't you say it was on your chest or something like that, you silly old man? Anyway, a couple of weeks later, Princess Anne visited the same hospital. She walked down the wards, came to this old fellow, said, what's the matter with you, my good man? He said, I've got a blooming big boil on my chest. Oh, she said, it's moved, has it?
Radio was all powerful, Ken, in one sense, because...
I think it still is. I think radio...
A ventriloquist had his own show.
Yes.
A ventriloquist on the radio.
Yes, that's great.
And people would sit and listen to the doll.
Yes, yes. Very popular in Liverpool, but... we go in for that kind of thing. This producer here, you know what he did? But the ventriloquist, Peterborough, he asked him, could he hold the doll nearer the microphone?
We present Peter Brough and Artie Andrews in Educating Artie.
We'll be educating Archie, so we'll be busy for a while.
Brough?
Yes, Archie, what is it?
Brough, can I have a word with you before you go out this morning?
All right, Archie, but make it short because I have an important business appointment and I don't want to be late.
Oh, this won't take a minute, Brough.
Archie, what is it you want?
Can you lend me 5 shillings?
No.
Half a crown?
No.
Sixpence?
No.
Want any boots cleaned?
No, I don't. Archie, I've told you about this before. Every time you borrow money, you lose a friend.
All right, lend me 5 bob and I'll try and get along without you.
I went to ventriloquism when I was about, about 12. I used to read The Wizard. And in the back of The Wizard, they always had these adverts for itching powder and stink bombs and things like that. And sea bacroscopes. You never see one of those. Like a plastic instrument like that, with all sorts of mirrors inside. Mirrors in different facets, different angles. And you can put it in your eye socket like a monocle, and you can see if an assassin is creeping up behind you. And this is very useful for a boy of 8. In fact, it's entirely necessary for a boy of 8. But another advert, you saw a man with a box on his back, and a voice, a bubble coming from saying, help! He said, fool your teachers, amaze your friends, send sixpence in stamps, become a ventriloquist. So I did, didn't I?
Yes.
I started out as a ventriloquist, you know, with a big dummy. But I had to take him out of my mouth because people couldn't hear me. In our show, we go around by coach, you know, and our coach driver used to be a ventriloquist. The trouble is, he won't drive without somebody sitting on his knee.
Einstein, Ellen Einstein. It does seem so naughty, oh my. Kissing is nice, though I've heard people say. But how to do it, I don't know the way. So you put your arms round my waist.
But you know, before you started doing the clubs, you got into the theatre. Your family used to go to the theatre. Did you go as a whole family, or did your dad take you and Billy?
No, my dad took all of us. We always went out.
We used to go to the Empire, didn't we, Mum?
Oh, and you'd be across above us then, because we used to go to the... We used to go to the Empire, but the Empire and the Pavilion, or the Pivvy, as they called it, but the one my dad used to absolutely love was Shakespeare Theatre of Varieties in Fraser Street. And they always used to have twice nightly variety. They're absolutely wonderful. I think that's where I first fell in love with the theatre. This lovely, this wonderful, you're in the darkened room. And you see, you're sitting in the dark now, aren't you? And there's a very good reason for this. It's bad enough looking at him. You go in the into the theatre. First of all, when you went to the Shakespeare, you used to go through the foyer first, which is all potted palm trees, lovely. You know, and you don't get many of those in Nottingham. Palm trees and all polished and brass and red plush. But yeah, when you go to the theatre, you know, anybody can switch the television set on. Anybody can listen to a radio. But when you go to a theatre, you don't just watch the show, you're in it. You are part of the experience, part of the show, part of going to the theatre. You go along there, and the lights and everything looks smart, and you usually smarten yourself up a bit. And you go through there, and the manager, good evening, madam, good evening, sir. You feel wonderful. Then you go into that darkened auditorium, all the red plush, and you sit there. And now and again, there's somebody smoking a cigar, or if you're very lucky, eating an orange. Sit there waiting, and then the band, the orchestra, it's Sidney Jones, and he was a real sort of Martin. They talk, evening dress again, all the band, evening dress. Little overture, you know, make you feel good, and then the curtain would rise, and that magical world would be there. So I fell in love with this marvellous thing called variety. And it is wonderful, you know. People sometimes look down their nose at variety and think it's old-fashioned. It is old-fashioned. The word variety means a variety of skills. A variety of skills. See, in the old variety bills, you'd have as many as, 12 or 15 acts on. All different acts. Everything. Jugglers, singers, acrobats. And each one of these people, it was like a little one-man business. They'd got this particular skill of singing, dancing, gymnasts, whatever, and they honed it, polished it, worked on it day after day after day. Even when they're on tour, they're still working during the daytime, polishing to get this one bit of entertainment right. And that's why variety is the greatest form of live entertainment you can get.
I'm subject to colds, and they make me quite deaf, and then I can't hear what you say. A fellow once asked me if I'd have a drink, and I heard that with a cold, by the way. As we drank, we got chatting of girls we had met. I described a sweet bird dressed in red. My description was good, and my pal went half mad. It was the girl he was going to wed. He said, "I'll punch your head." I said, "Whose?" He said, "Yours." I said, "Mine." He said, "Yes." I said, "Oh." He said, "Want to fight?" I said, "Who?" He said, "You." I said, "Me." He said, "Yes." I said, "No." So we then got to words, and he said, "You're a cad." I said, "Cad?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Who?" He said, "Who?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You." I said, "Oh, so of course, then I knew."
I know one of your favourite actors is Rob Wilton.
When you're listening to Rob Wilton, it's a particular English kind of comedy called drollery. And it's really mostly performed by actors, which is what Rob Wilton was. He was an actor. Rob Wilton and his wife ran a theatre just at the bottom of Everton Valley called The Lyric. So when he came to do comedy in variety, and comedy in television, and comedy on radio, he brought with him all the skills of an actor. It's called business. They use what they call business. With facials, with an actor, to get his message across, he uses everything they can. And I said to any young comic, if you want to really be a comic, a real comic, go and listen to Rob Wilson, watch him say, the day war broke out, the wife said to me, she said, "What are you doing wearing that ridiculous uniform?" He said, "Well, I'm in the Home Guard." She said, "Why are you, well, how do you mean the Home Guard?" He said, "Well, I'm guarding the White Cliffs of Dover." She said, "What for? Just you?" "Oh, no," he said, "there's five or six of us." asked him, why are you wearing that ridiculous uniform? Well, he said, I've told you in case Hitler invades this country. She said, well, how will you know it's him? She said, you said you're guarding the White Cliffs of Dover in case Hitler invades this country. How will you know it's Hitler? Well, he said, I've got a tongue in my head, haven't I? That is acting. That's not just telling jokes.
His catchphrase was the day war broke out.
The war broke, yeah.
Can you remember what you were doing the day war broke out?
The day war broke out? Yeah, I can, yeah. Listening to the radio, listening to Mr. Chamberlain. Within minutes, an air raid siren went in London. It was a false alarm, I think. But anyway, everybody shot up into the shelters. And, one thing I do remember, the week war broke out, I can see now, plain as in my mind now, Thomas Lane, it's got a bit of a brew to it, a bit of a hip, hill to it, and I can see now a group of lads, and they were marching with somebody drilling them. Hey, hut, marching, drilling, walking up and down Thomas Lane, training to be soldiers. Only they didn't have any guns. We didn't have any to give them. You know what they had? Brush poles.
What the hell?
They were drilling young soldiers with brush poles. That's how prepared. I believe when the war broke out, I think we had 6 aeroplanes. And they were the double wingers. 6 aeroplanes.
I can remember, I was born on the 26th of September. War started on the 3rd.
Well, it would do, yeah. He was a war baby.
I was.
His father took one look at him and war broke out.
Yeah. Yeah. They reckon I was the cause of it. But I can still remember in the air raid shelters, the old-fashioned concrete air raid shelters in the middle. I was born in...
The Anderson shelter.
But no, the Andersons were tin, weren't they? Kenny's were concrete.
Yeah, they were like galvanised.
But people used to put little shows on in the air raid shelters.
Yes, yes, yes. To children, it was fun. So we'd seen it in the cinema and we'd heard about wars. So really, war was fun. Great. And then one day, I realised what war really did. I think we were about 2 years into the war, probably, and I'd been doing a bit of entertaining, and I did a show at what was then the Royal Southern Hospital, but it had been taken over as a military hospital. And I went on to do my vent act. It's a good job I was only a little boy, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it. Because the first 4 rows were all men in wheelchairs with no legs and no arms, all in what they call hospital blues. Each bit, what a dreadful shade of blue it was.
You and I have got more in common than you think, besides being like both...
Well, it is growing a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Besides both being like sort of sex symbols, my family had a coal business the same time as yours.
Did they really?
My grandfather's brother, A.E. Tomlinson, which went from Netherfield Road to Great Homer Street.
Good gracious.
But did you know there was a coal strike in 1926?
I do. I don't know because I wasn't born, but I do know.
Did you know?
I heard of it. And I know that my father, during the coal strike, because there wasn't any coal to sell, he'd always been a musician, my dad, and with a double bass. So, but he had to get some money quick, so within 2 or 3 months, he learned to play the saxophone, which is, it's an ill wind that nobody blows good. And my dad applied for the job and got the job playing the saxophone professionally as a musician in the Isle of Man. So he played a couple of seasons in the Isle of Man, and that's how we...
Go away.
Yeah. But when I left school, I wanted to follow into the family coal business. And so when Billy was 16, I think he'd be, 16, 16 now, and my dad bought this beautiful coal cart. Oh, beautiful new coal cart, all painted up with rubber tyres, rubber tyres, and red and yellow, and I bought it back, Dodd and Sons, 2 red shots, and a beautiful brown cart horse called Duke. And my dad said, go out now, go around the housing estates around Dovecot and Highton, and shout out, coal for money! Well, we were out selling coal one day, passing this big block of flats, you see, and this lady at the top flat stuck her head out of the window and said, yui! Yui! Billy said to me, he said,
you better take this one. It'll be a good experience for your back. So, I backed him in the coal car, got the bag of coal in the back, and away went. I'll show him. I'm a man. I might only be 14, but I'm a man. I'm as macho as any man. I'll do this. I'll get my wage at the end of the week, I think, I hope. And I'll carry this bag of coal, get the lady on the top shelf flat. So I got the first flight, I apologize for telling you this, got the second flight, I said, blimey, my knees started buckling under me. Got the third flight, I said, the heaviest bag of coal ever got. Got the fourth flight, I turned around and found I had the horse by the ears.
Invited to spend 30 crazy minutes with the unpredictable Ken Dodd, who's here to prove it's great to be young.
First of all, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to say how tickled I am. How tickled I am at the kickoff. Yes. Have you ever been tickled at the kickoff, Mrs.? You shouldn't play rugby. They're always having a try. By Jove. People often say, what is it about Ken Dodd that makes him different? The answer's easy. Me brain. That's it, in a nutshell.
You turned pro in 1954.
54, September 54, yeah.
What, was that a big gamble, Ken? Or was...
Yes, it was, yeah. Yes.
Was you still working with your dad on the coal?
No, I was working myself then. Big decision, because you have to... You know, it does feel, when you start any new job, is a big decision. But to stop doing a job that you've been doing for ages and to go into the world of show business, after all they tell you, you know, never go in show business. Oh, you'll regret it. Oh, you'll see, you'll starve, you know. You've seen all these artists, they always end up in, oh, God, the stories. But you see, I was always middle 20s, and I thought, well, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it.
We have always thought that it might be a good question to put to Mr. Kenneth Dodd and the members of the Beatles. To what extent do they attribute their success to their hairstyles? And we'll start by asking that question now of Mr. Ken Dodd.
We call it her in Liverpool, you see. We always had the Judy with the fur her. A fellow went into one of those shops once in Liverpool where they sell those, minks and things. And he says to the girl, he said, give us one of those hurry coats. Say, I beg your pardon, sir, what fur? He said, fur the Judy. Who do you think?
Do you think that he owes a lot of his success to his hairstyle, fellas?
No, I don't think it helped at all.
It probably would have been
better if he was
bald. I think the teeth on the hair, all the gimmicks, you know, I think you have to have one. I think you definitely have to have a gimmick.
Have you no ambitions to form a group yourself?
Love to, with the boys.
Yes.
Kenny and the Cockroaches.
No, I mean, Kenny and the Would you
or Ringo and the Layabouts. The only thing is I'd have to change my name, you see. I'd have to have a name like Cliff or Rock, something earthy.
Well,
I don't know, eh?
Flash. Cliff Dodd.
No.
Rock Dodd.
No, let's invite suggestions for an earthy name for me.
Yeah, well, what about that, fella?
Sod.
There were six Beatles, you know. There were the four lads who were absolutely, you know, brilliant at what they did. There was another man, George Martin. George Martin, who was a magnificent musician and orchestrator, and he took the songs and turned them into something absolutely beautiful. He turned them into masterpieces, didn't he? The architect who steered them, Brian Epstein, was also a very, very clever young man. Very clever, because the way you're managed, you know, has got a lot to do with it. Your agent has a tremendous amount to do with your success or failure. And I want you to remember that. This is... I was very fortunate. I had a great fellow, Dave Forrester. He steered me. I thought it was a long time, but in 10 years, from playing the clubs and dinners in Liverpool, inside 10 years, I was top of the bill at the London Palladium there.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be asking such questions, such searching questions as, where am I? And is that your hand, Gladys? We shall meet the composer who crossed Purcell with Handel's Water Music and got I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. Tonight, Tonight we shall reveal what happened the night Richard Burton seduced Ina Sharples. Albert Tatlock shot himself. He shot himself, didn't he? Yes. We shall be asking musical questions like, Mick Jagger, is there a cure? And a leading men's underwear manufacturer will ask the inevitable question, why fronts? What? Today, ladies and gentlemen, what a beautiful day. What a beautiful day for shoving a copper rod up Andre Previn's trousers and saying, how's that for a lightning conductor? Can't touch a boy. What a beautiful day for ramming... pushing. Pushing a euphonium down the back of your granddad's trousers, playing the flight of the bumblebee and saying, that'll bring the colour to your cheeks.
Your agent was Mr. Forrester.
Dave Forrester, yeah. Mike Yarwood did a routine about Dave Forrester trying to sell Ken Dodd to the William Morris agency, which is the biggest agency in America. So Dave Forrester said, yes, Dave, we've got a lot of talent here, a man called Ken Dodd. Ken Dodd, yeah, yes. Well, what does he do? Well, he comes on and he waves his tickling stick. No, it's nothing like that. No. And then he brings the Diddy Men on. The Diddy Men. The Diddy Men. They're like small... No, they're not dwarfs. No. They're Diddy Men. They come on with like tall hats and big... Yes, they're dwarfs, yeah. And it's a full routine, but the man was absolutely superb. Mike Yarwood, a great tragedy when he had to say goodbye to show business. Perhaps the best we've ever had. We know we've got some good impersonators today, but Mike Yarwood was the best.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to say how tickled I am. Dude, what a beautiful day today. What a beautiful day for doing something daft, like running into Buckingham Palace, into the smallest room, pulling the chain and saying, how about that for a royal flush?
You were talking before about the... what were you talking about?
we were talking about the Beatles and being a pop star. Well, you were a pop star, weren't you, with your first... 1965.
Oh,
yes, tell us about that.
Oh, I know what it's like to be mobbed. To have ladies throwing garments at you. Some of them hurt, you know. You get a corset round your ear, all you know. You know what you mean. No, I've always, as I say, I love singing in our house. We all sang, everybody, all the Dodd family, we all sang at the... We had no lock on the bathroom door, so we all sang. And I was in the choir at the church opposite, till they found out where the noise was coming from. And I've always loved music and singing. And so... When I first started, a lot of comedians used to finish the act with a sort of, when you're smiling, I want to be happy. So I thought I'd try Tearful Earful. So I started singing one or two romantic, sentimental songs. And in those days, the record pluggers, the music publishers, they had a song plugger, and his job was to get their songs, get that company's songs heard on the radio. So they would promise you anything to get their song plugged. And this fella rang me up and he kept asking me, he said, what do you think about this one? The music publisher, I said, well, what's it called? He said, well, it's a continental song. I'll play you a dubbing of it. And he played this song. I said, oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful melody. Well, he said, a man called Jimmy Kennedy is sitting on top of the mountain in Europe now trying to think of words. The French version is Mon cœur est un violon. Mon cœur est un violon. And he came up with Love is Like a Violin.
Love is like a violin, with its strings around your heart, soft and sweet as dreams begin, sadly crying when you part.
I sang it on Workers' Playtime. I did what my usual, by Jove, water, and then went to la da do da dee da dee, and it must have got a blip on their sales charts. It went, boop, and they, oh, well, better get this fella to record it. So I recorded Love Is Like a Violin, and Eric Rogers, I remember, was the MD, And it got up to number two on most charts. So that was my first success, as long as I can find it. Well, on the strength of that, of course, they let me do some others. And the next big one was a song called Happiness, which I fell for, right? I thought, happy, this is a great song, this Happiness. And then, of course, the big one was Tears in 1965 and The River. I've had 30 songs in the top 20. Not bad for a comedian from Notty Ash, is it?
That's marvellous.
We present Jimmy Clitheroe as the Clitheroe Kid with Peter Sinclair, Patricia Burke, Danny Ross and Diana Day in...
The Evils of Tomato Juice. Alfie! Wake up, Alfie! Alfie! Come on, Rip Van Winkle. Your 100 years are up.
Oh, my head.
Alfie, are you all right? You've gone the colour of me granddad's cucumber.
Don't shout. I'm not well. I'm ill.
That's what your mum said when she sent me up.
You know, she had to put me to bed last night. What did my dad say?
He's like you. He's not very well either.
How do you know?
He said, that stupid son of mine, he makes me sick.
Like I thought he was mad at me.
Well, you'd be mad if you fell over your own son in the coal shed.
If you asked me who was one of my favourite people, we'd have to be Jimmy. Jimmy Clitheroe, a beautiful little man. I played Central Pier in Blackpool and we shared the same dressing room. Tiny little dressing room. So we shared it for 6 months. We started in April and finished just before Christmas, November. So I shared the same dressing room with Jimmy twice nightly, three times on a Thursday. And in all that time, he was such a just smashing little fella. But of course, he was a man. It was strange to see him sometimes in a schoolboy's uniform with short trousers and a school cap on, pouring himself a Guinness. But he, yes, and he gave me wonderful advice, gave me good advice. Charlie Chester, another charming man. I did my first radio show. It was Workers' Playtime in November 54 from Barton Power Station in Manchester. And it was live in those days. I was terrified. Just Workers' Playtime radio. I was absolutely terribly nervous. And I went outside. It was from a works canteen. So I went outside. I was shaking like a leaf. And Charlie, I don't know whether he'd seen me. When he came out, he said, "You're all right, Sam?" I said, well, no, not really, Mr. Chester. He said, "Why?" God, I said, I'm so afraid. I said, "I'm so frightened." "What frightened?" He said, "I said, well, you know, doing this is my first radio show." He said, "Is that your script?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Let's have a look." So he said, "Go up now." He said, "You've got a better script than I've got. Go on," he said, "get on there and do it. You'll be fine."
"Mr. Chester, come along now. And what brought you here?"
"A number seven bus."
"A number seven bus."
"Nothing like wit, hey?"
"Nothing."
"Oh, my son.
You'll have another side will be aching in a minute. Now, to Pali, Charlie. Now. Tell me, what have you come about of?"
"Well, can we talk before Miss Medworthy?"
"If we're quick."
Oh.
Yes.
"Well, I suffer from delusions."
"Delusions? Yes. You mean, for instance, you think you're a comedian?"
"No, I think you are."
"You were voted the most popular Scouser of all time, which was marvellous. You beat me by 16 or 17 places."
"I can't believe that."
Tell us what you love about Liverpool, Ken.
Liverpool is a wonderful, marvellous, magnificent city. My Liverpool, of course, revolves around Notty Ash. That lovely place there, Notty Ash, where we live. And the theatres, all the theatres, I love all the theatres. And the thing that makes a city great are the people. The people who live here. A city is only a place, isn't it? But it becomes a great city. And I've travelled all over Britain. I'm a gigster. You know, I go up, down, round, here, there and everywhere. So I'm able to have a good take on each particular town and city. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a particularly sentimental person. If I thought there was somewhere nicer than Liverpool, I'd probably live there. But of all the time, I've been 50 years travelling all over British Isles, I've never found anywhere
nicer than Liverpool.
Oh, Liverpool Zoo, lovely Liverpool Zoo, why don't you behave just like other girls do? Why must my poor heart keep following you? Stay home and love me, my Liverpool Zoo.
So I went to study at the RADA. That's the Rochdale Hairdressers Association. Of course, when I left there, as a youth, I went into repertory, and I only had very small roles at first. I played a part of mice, earwigs, water voles, and things like that. And then, later on... then I got a job. I got the job of the bus conductor in Journey's End. And I was in a juvenile touring version of Her. It was called Fluff. I only had a tiny part, but I was noticed.
So, tell us about your acting roles as one thespian to another.
Acting, yes, laddie. Oh, laddie. I did a couple of bits in films. I did a little bit in Kenneth Albrand's... you know, Kenneth Albrand. In Hamlet. And then I did another little bit in Alice in Wonderland when I don't know whether it was a mole or a water rat or whatever it was something. Alice. I had to learn all sorts of strange lines, all Lewis Carroll lines. That was good. And then one time I played Malvolio here at the Playhouse in Liverpool, and it was very interesting. The producer's a man called Anthony Tuckey. When he first asked me to do it, I said, what makes you think that... I'm a comedian. I said, what makes you think that I could play Malvolio? Oh, Will Cairn, he said. I saw the character of Malvolio. I said, I'll tell you some other time. So I waited. We did the run of the play. And on the last night party, you know, in what they call the hostility, they have hospitality. So they have the white wine and sausage rolls and things on toast. And I thought I'll get him again, because I'm sure he's had a couple of white wines. I said, Mr. Tuckey, when I first said I'd do this part, I said, you told me you were going to explain to me why you thought I could play the part of Malvolio. Oh, Ken, well, you see, I saw the character of Malvolio as being that of a jumped-up peasant. A jumped-up peasant who had delusions of grandeur far above his station. Oh, so thank you.
Tell us about your part in Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, yes, that was... you get to an age in your life, and you get to an age in your career when it's all very nice, wonderful, yeah, great, sure, but you're looking for a bit of fun, you know, a bit of excitement. So you tend to take jobs on that you normally would frighten the life out of, you know.
Halt! Who's there?
Surprise, surprise! Welcome, friends! A thousand welcomes!
Funny way to welcome your friends. We thought you'd been attacked by space pirates. Now, about this toll fee...
Toll fee? Oh, tonight is your lucky night, because you are our 10 billionth customer.
You mean to say 10 billion people have come here?
Exactly.
Congratulations. Now, about this toll fee...
But you've won! You've won the grand prize!
But what is it? I've never won anything before.
You have won our fabulous 50s tour. A whole week in Disneyland, planet Earth. And this time, they're going back to 1959, the rock and roll year.
Oh, that's fantastic! Oh, let's go, Doctor, please agree.
If somebody said to me, how will you alter, will you do anything different in your life? I said, yes, I would. I would love to have had some... dramatic acting training. Yes, I would, because I've got the legs for it, the tights. I've got the legs for it, and I wouldn't mind having a good opera. That's where a man gets stabbed, and instead of bleeding, he sings. I wouldn't mind having a go at... What else can I have a go at? Opera, ballet, right? No, I think I'll stick as I am. I think variety to me is the greatest form of theatre entertainment, live theatre. You don't just watch it, you're in it. So I think, yeah, I am the future. I don't like people talking about me in the past tense. I don't like when people say, he was this and he did do that. No, I'm a now person. It's what I'm doing now that it really interests me and what I'm going to do in the future.
Tell us about some of the awards you've won, Ken, because you've won...
Awards? I've had several very nice compliments. I think one of the best was the OBE, One Boiled Egg. I've been threatened with the DSO, but no, I'm not... I want to do show business, so... They're nice things to have. They are wonderful occasions, because everybody starts cheering, and you think, oh, it's me. But I think that the greatest award of all is to go on and know when you've done a good show, when you've done a really good one, and you see their faces, and you see them rock.
Willie Shakespeare said that life is a great convenience. We all have... Life is like a great convenience. We all have our entrances and exits. Some of us have a brief stay, and some of us are there longer than others. Some stand idly doing nothing, while others get on with the performance in hand.
Is it true that you still have all your old props, your original props, and most of your original scripts?
Haven't I looked after you? I've got a lot of old props. I get told off for hoarding. I'm a terrible hoarder. You know, they in time, everything goes, and most of it has to stay in here. So, yeah, you need some of your old props. I mean, this suit I wore for Queen Victoria. And she said, we are not amused. But you do treasure some of your old jokes, yeah? Yeah, I've got one or two jokes in the Act Now that I still tell and do. I do it not because they are good gags, but they're jokes that perhaps somebody who I love dearly told me. Some of my father's jokes. And they always get big laughs, yeah? What was the joke? What's the joke I do there? I say, how are you? How many children have you got? Eight? Have you really? What a look. Stand up and take a bow. No, sit down and take a rest. Do you live in a shoe? You must know what to do. What a good job you stitched that hole up in his pyjamas. Well, you know what they say? A stitch in time, save. I've been telling that joke for 50 years. More than 50 years, and it still gets a good laugh. So what? And a joke, a really good joke, becomes an old friend. People say sometimes, how do you remember all the jokes? Well, they're like old friends, and you don't forget an old friend, do you? So yeah, I do treasure some of the old props. One of the things you treasure most of all, of course, are your memories.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Finally, sir, out of all the personalities you've met on the stage and those of you admired, who do you remember most?
I think you find that the people who are most successful, people who are worthy of the name stars, are very, very nice people. And the people at the top are usually very, very, very clever people. That's how they got there. I've met some big... One of the most wonderful things was to stand on the Palladium stage and to stand on that very spot. I never met him. I wish you would. I've actually stood on the Palladium stage doing my show. I've sung to Bing Crosby. Me! Ken Dodd from Naughty Ash. I've sung, and Bing Crosby was sitting there going... Yeah, He came round afterwards. I didn't give him his money back, but he came. I've actually stood on the stage and told jokes to Bob Hope. Me! A British journalist said to him, he said, Mr. Hope, he said, what did you think of our Ken Dodd? Oh, gee, said that guy. That guy, he's so funny, he said. Every laugh was like a sword in my side. But he was a very nice, very charming man. Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Phil Harris, Red Skelton. Yeah, and all smart, wonderful people. And over the years, I think I've given tickling sticks to about 5 prime ministers. And they all took it. They all wanted it, yeah. Some of them actually took it into the House of Commons with them. I've met businessmen, tycoons and millionaires. And shall I tell you something, ladies and gentlemen? I was keeping a diary at the time. It would be one of the Palladium series seasons, either 65 or 67. I wrote a curious thing in my diary. Probably a bit sad, actually. Certainly cynical. I would never want it to be quoted. So I won't say
it. Mr. Ken Dodd! Happiness,
the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with more than my share of happiness. I got more than my share of happiness.